I'm Doug Keck, and welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. A great guest, author, radio, raconteur himself, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and two books, Being a Grandparent, Just Like Being a Parent, Only Different, and Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime, The Best Gift You Could Give Your Kids, both proudly published by EWTN Publishing.
I would prefer that you say raconteur.
Okay, raconteur. Okay, that's specific to you.
Yes.
Okay, but one way or the other, best-selling author. You've got the TV show. Are there other goals? Aren't you conquering the internet now? didn't you do some more spots that are going to be airing on the internet?
Yes. Yes, I'm learning to speak in sound bites.
So you're like Mr. Digital here.
Well, it's been a long journey because for 2 years I wore my garage door opener, so people think I have a pager.
There you go, right. That was your doctor thing. It used to be in the early days when you had a pager, everybody thought you were a doctor.
Oh, I was big time.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the first book in the first segment, Being a Grandparent, Just Like Being a Parent, Only Different. It would strike me that this is probably a book that a lot of people would be interested in because being a grandparent seems like it's different today than it was even 50 years ago.
Most common questions I get from grandparents, and one of the most common comments I get was, I'd like to spoil my grandkids, but I can't. They're already spoiled, and I wish their parents would discipline them. So I talk about that in there, too. When do you step in? When do you shut your mouth?
Yeah, well, that seems to be like in going through the questions you have in the book. A lot of people are trying to figure out, how do I navigate that situation? How do I deal with my grandchildren in relation to the parents? Like one of the ones I remember off the top of my head was, you know, am I in charge of discipline if they're staying with me at my house?
The parents put limits on it. Okay, so I'm going to watch your kid. I'm going to have certain discipline. But the mom might say, I don't want you spanking him. Or I don't want him to do X. Okay, well, what can I do? So you got to set the terms. Set the terms. The most freedom you have as a grandparent in disciplining is at your house, because you can set the terms. Now, if the parents are there, you are dramatically constricted.
Right.
And unless you have this unique relationship with the parents who says, Dad, you know, we're one here. You can do what you want. I also tell grandparents, you protect your house. I mean, if this kid's starting to do damage to your house and their parents are sitting there on their phone, you can do something about that, even though, sadly, you risk.
Have you had that situation where that kind of thing was going on, where a child was and the grandparent was there and the
I've had it in my own family.
Okay.
Where the kids are doing something and the parents are just letting them do it. And finally I said something and they blew me off. And then about 10 minutes later, I kind of acted like a grandpa, and I said, did you hear me? And the parents were looking at me shocked. Like, I raised my voice to their child?
Well, let me ask you, you say in the beginning of the book, the relationship generally holds that the better parents you were, the better grandparent you'll be, but being a grandparent will differ from being a parent. You say some are baffled as to why their own children are raising the grandkids so unlike the way they were raised in practice, discipline, and morals. And you talk about the pain those whose grandchildren have been removed from their lives. That especially is probably a bigger problem today than ever.
It's happening as an epidemic, Doug. It's the final club. It is, I don't like the fact that you gave me advice that I didn't want. You didn't read the cues as a grandparent. I always tell this to grandparents, read the cues. The first few times that you offer advice that you think is helpful, and it could be most benign. Do you think he just needs a warmer coat? And you get this look that says, I know how to raise my children.
Right,
I'm a good parent. Read the cue. Because if you keep going through this, I'll get calls on the radio where they'll say, I don't get to see my grandkids.
Right.
What happened? Well, I think I gave too much advice too long.
Right.
And finally, they're shutting me out.
Right.
It's the ultimate club. It happens a lot.
Well, I remember one question where you put to the point of saying, you know, maybe you need to also look in the mirror and make sure the reason you're not welcome to come and visit the family is because of things you've been doing that are problematic.
Something in there that I call damage control. Let's say that you're severed from your kids, your grandkids. And oftentimes they say, I don't know what I did wrong. I just don't know what I did wrong. You do damage control. You go in and you say, I'm sorry. I gave my opinion where it didn't belong, and you didn't ask for it. Mm-hmm. These are your children, and I was out of line. Mm-hmm. So I really would very much like to apologize, and I promise you I won't do it again. Now, you got about a 50-50 chance of that succeeding. Mm-hmm. There will be some cases where I don't trust you to change who you are anyway, mm-hmm. and I don't like who you are. But other times, it softens them enough mm-hmm. that you can begin to rekindle the relationship.
Well, let me ask you one question with the idea that people as grandparents, and you say, I expect that I would enjoy being a grandparent. I underestimated how much. So I'm assuming most people who have it, it's a very positive experience. But I'm wondering if also because of the, whether it's single motherhood or a combination of where women are working and that dynamic, where they rely that much maybe more on the grandparents to pick up and help on things, combined with the fact that they might also be dealing with the situation that they feel like they're being judged over, well, you should really be home watching the kids.
There's an interesting statistic that I saw recently. 8% of grandparents are now raising their grandkids, highest ever recorded. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection of a lot of falling apart younger generation families where the grandparents have to step in and pick up the pieces. Many grandparents will tell me, I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd like to absorb some of this. I'll watch him 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. Well, now it was all weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid to say I don't want to because they'll get mad
right.
and pull it back.
Right.
These are the kinds of things that grandparents find themselves into.
I would think it's also easy for parents at times because the grandparents are so thrilled to be with the kids, especially early on, that they start to just believe, well, they love doing
this,
so it's not a problem.
They'll get as much a dose as they want.
Yeah, it's not a problem, without realizing you're still dealing with elderly people, you know, who have their own lives and then are dealing with the fact that they don't have as much energy as they used to.
I'm familiar with it.
Right,
I have 10 grandkids.
Right. So that's a problem.
Well, what happens in the dynamic a lot is that the grandparent is nervous about setting limits. Mm-hmm. They don't know how the limits are going to be taken. They don't want the overreaction of, fine, you don't need to see him at all then. Fine.
Right, right.
I can find something. I can get daycare. Fine. So they're
Or I'll put him in daycare as a threat. Well, I don't want them to go into daycare.
Yeah, so I'm skittish.
I see.
So
okay.
So I will give more of myself than I want. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is, ultimately, it exhausts the grandparent.
Right.
And then they come to the point where they say, you know, you might want to get him daycare, you know.
Right, or at least appreciate that, that you're putting that person in a tough spot.
You got to watch the competition.
Right.
They'll say to me, we're out of town. The other grandparents are in town.
Or in town, right, yeah.
And they see him all the time. And they can go to their activities. And they can get him stuff. So the temptation is to try to make up for.
Right. That's kind of like what you see with divorced parents.
Yes, exactly. That's a losing game.
Yeah,
you can't make up for it. You can only be who you are when you're there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I say that the grandparents try to make up from a lack of presence with presence.
Mm-hmm.
Spelled differently.
Right, right.
And that's what they do. That doesn't work.
Right.
The first time that kid looks behind grandma's back when she comes in the door tells you.
What they're expecting. This was, you mentioned here, the birth order effect can reemerge with grandchildren. What's the birth order effect and why does it reemerge?
Because the first grandkid, the sun rises and sets in his backside.
Okay.
All right, so I was the Italian grandson first time. And my grandmother's favoritism for me was so blatant that as I got older, even I had to resist it because it was too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Raymond gets this first. When he's done with that and says, there's anything left, you can have it.
So you were the original idea for Everybody Loves Raymond.
That was my family.
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay. Now, one of the ones we just were talking about, kind of any tips for out-of-state grandparents, and you say one last suggestion. If you do stay, make your bed, hang up your wet towel. You wouldn't have to do that at a hotel, you know. Do you think many times it would be better to stay at a hotel?
I suggest that oftentimes to parents. If you get the slightest whiff that they're a little uneasy or a little resistant to you staying there,
mm-hmm.
if you get the slightest whiff, my wife and I visit my son in Rhode Island, and we sleep on the couch. And they let us, and they save us about 700 bucks by sleeping on the couch for the 3 nights we're there.
Right.
But they're very good about it. There isn't the slightest sign. But if there were, we would say, "Hotel, we're going to head for a hotel. We'll be back in the morning."
Right. Or if going forward, a couple of years from now, it becomes like that, then you go and say, "Okay."
Well, I would want my wife to get the hotel. I want to stay on the couch.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. I thought you liked that, the survey bar or something in the room. Anyway, you say this, getting along better with someone often means getting along less poorly.
Yes, that's right. A number one point of friction, if you were to gauge the relationships, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, that's the one that is the highest level of friction, the highest threat of severing of the relationship. And often I will advise the mother-in-law, okay, you think she's prickly, you think she's peevish, you think she is, your son could have done better, okay.
Right, okay.
You got to be civil. You just got to be civil. You got to be pleasant. You may not have the warm relationship that you would have liked to have had. It's like the old Italian joke where the son brings home three women and he says, "Mom, I want you to know one of these women I'm going to marry. And I need you to talk to him for an hour." So she talks and she says, "You're going to marry that one." Mm-hmm. He said, "How did you know that?" And she goes, "I don't like her."
I got it. Okay. Moving ahead. I don't recall questioning my parenting like parents do these days. My daughter has more self-doubts raising her six-year-old son than we did with all five of our children. What has changed?
Oh, my gosh. I've changed. There's millions of me. Mm-hmm. The experts are everywhere. We're pounding people with our theories.
Are they
with
forcing these books down people's throats, too?
Yeah. Those kinds of books. I'm making a living out of countering the experts and trying to get people back in charge. That's exactly what's happening. I'm starting to hear more and more grandparents tell me, "My daughter goes to the internet for her advice."
Right.
So whatever I have to say is already outdated, overused, Neanderthal back there. I say, "Well, in that case, yeah, but what she's using isn't working at all. My five-year-old grandson is unpleasant."
Right.
You got to hope that at some point she realizes that and recognizes. That's how they come to my office. They get to the point where I don't like this anymore. Sometimes the child's three, sometimes he's 13, sometimes he's 38.
Right.
But they do get to the point where they've had enough. And I said, that's what you're kind of...
Well, when we see so much of these theories, let's say, at least in my mind, coming out of the 60s and the 70s and all, and they never work, but nobody ever admits they don't work. They just come up with a new variation on it.
That's what it is. I call it the stretch, Doug. Mm-hmm. Here's why we get so many flaky theories. If I'm supposed to be smarter than you, because I got letters after my name, you know, mm-hmm. PhD, permanent head damage, then I've got to come up with ideas you haven't thought of. I've got to come up with new, enlightened kind of ways. I can't just simply say something and you go, "Well, my grandmother used to tell me that," because see, that's not high status.
What am I paying you for?
Yes, exactly. So I stretch. Right. And in stretching, I become unreal. I become ineffective. I come up with ideas that don't work, but they sure sound smart on paper.
Right. This was another one. My daughter phones me upset with her husband. I want to be supportive, but I feel caught in the middle.
That's dangerous. That is really dangerous when you have a son or daughter talking to you about their spouse, because if you comment, sometimes even if you don't comment, you just listen attentively, you are taken as support. And then that can be used with that spouse. I've had many relationships really deteriorate because once they start to get along better, husband and wife, the one spouse is aware that you've known all this stuff. You've heard all this stuff about me from one perspective. And that really puts an edge on
it. And they may even heard in conversation what advice you had given the other party.
That's ticklish territory.
Yeah, might not have been positive.
You almost
got to
say things like, "I know you're frustrated, but I can't immerse myself in this because if I do, when you guys resolve it, I'm still going to be the person who doesn't understand."
Right. And I probably don't totally understand because I'm not in your shoes in the situation. One last question with my daughter is not raising her children in religious beliefs that she was raised in. When I try to introduce my grandchildren, few practices, grace before meals, prayers, picture Bibles, she gets upset, tells me not to push my religion upon her children.
You back off. You have to back off. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have a parent that says, look, Mom, you want to take them to church, take them to church. Mm-hmm. Or, Mom, you want to get them a crucifix for their bedroom, that's okay. You can have get a crucifix. So you know what your limits are. Mm-hmm. But when it's hostile, mm-hmm. when it's,
right,
you just have to back off. And I tell the grandparents, I'll say, let them see that Grandma or Grandpa is one of the nicest people in their lives.
That's right.
I used to have a Bible study in a prison. And a lot of the guys would come in and I'd say, why are you here? Mm-hmm. And they'd say this, well, I wasn't raised with any religion, but my grandma used to sometimes take me to church.
Mm-hmm. And that was a positive experience,
yes.
Positive memory.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you're allowed.
And that's something we deal with, obviously, on EWTN. We encourage, obviously, there's lots of grandparents who are daycaring their grandkids, and it's a great opportunity, at least passively, to have them watch EWTN programs or even to be able to do stuff like, saying grace and things like
you
that.
You can do that, and even if when the parent is there, there's overt hostility, when they're with you, mm-hmm. I mean, you can do all kinds of little tiny things that just kind of evidence the faith.
Right, and we know from other situations where somebody wasn't, I guess, as objectionable about it being, where the kid doing it would say, this is what when I go to grandma's, this is what we do. Could we do that at our house, etc.?
I call that let the children lead them.
Right, absolutely. So those are, there can be upside there. It depends on the situation. Being a grandparent, just like being a parent, only different. And speaking of only different, we've got Dr. Ray's Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime, best gift you can give your kids. You're saying that discipline is a gift?
You don't discipline them, the world will. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, go ahead. You want to let the world discipline your kid when he's 28 years old? He's going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. So whether you feel guilty or whether you feel he won't like you or whether you feel you're not enlightened psychologically enough, you're turning him over to the world if you don't do this. No mm-hmm. parent likes the discipline. I hate disciplining. Mm-hmm. People think because I talk about it so much that I'm, no, I'm not. I'm kind of soft.
Well, you're one of the most undisciplined people I've ever met.
That's true, but I'm too old to care now. Let's get off my lawn.
Okay. Well, you say discipline is critical to raising moral people, as you indicated. And then you say, what do I mean by discipline? So what do you mean by discipline? Because as you indicate here, if you took a poll, there'd be a million different answers, right?
Narrowest definition, spanking. Uh-huh. That's what some people mean by discipline. Uh-huh. Broadest definition, anything that teaches. Mm-hmm. For most people, the common definition is limits and expectations backed by consequences. Mm-hmm.
Why am I so sure that discipline is a top concern among parents today?
By far, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. They are often confused, they second guess themselves, and especially religious parents, mm-hmm. because they're going against a culture no longer on their side. So their standards and expectations are very different from the cultures. Right. And a kid gets older, he's not oblivious to that. Mm-hmm. Hey, Dad, how can all those people be wrong and you be right?
Right.
So in fact, you have to have enormous stamina and resolve to be a strong parent. But people think discipline is mean. Discipline's mm-hmm. not mean. Discipline is kind. You can have mean discipline.
Right.
You can be nasty and harsh, but that's not discipline. That's nasty and harsh.
Well, there's a great ex-football coach, who said, you either have discipline or regret. You have to choose which one you'd like to have. Which seemed like an incredibly prescient statement.
That book is a compilation. I used to write columns.
Right.
And it's a compilation of the most common discipline questions I get from parents, roughly ages 2 to 18.
And how did you organize it?
I organized it by chapters of somewhat related stuff. I had discipline in, misbehavior in word, misbehavior in deed,
okay.
Common discipline misconceptions, parents talking themselves out of authority. They kind of set it out in grouped, somewhat relatable questions.
You said, no matter how mean you might think you are for disciplining, you are a whole lot less mean than life itself, which is what you were talking about.
Life doesn't put a snotty, disrespectful human being in a corner. Life punches him in the face, life fires him, life arrests him, life makes him lose a girlfriend. Life consequences are much heavier. I had a son and daughter we adopted at age 4. And the foster parents, and I can speak this now, they both passed on. They were very nice people, but they didn't discipline the kids. As a consequence, two other families were selected prior to us to adopt these two children. They both backed out because they met the kids. And I said, you see what life did? This little 4-year-old boy and girl twice lost a mom and a dad because of their conduct, because the big people didn't do what the big people needed to do.
And that says, that's why you say, if you intend to change anybody, it's best to start right now. Time will only make change harder for everyone.
Parents will say this to me, is it too late? Is it too late? I mean, I realize now I've been permissive, or I realize now that I've let him get away with a lot, or I realize now I've let him have too much freedom. Is it too late? I go, whether it is or whether it isn't is not the question. You have to try. You have to change those things that you can change quickly to try to turn this around. When you're drinking spoiled milk, you don't go, ooh, you know that's spoiled. I think I'll just take a few more light sips.
Right.
No, you get rid of it.
Right. Maybe it'll taste better, or I'll get used to it.
Maybe by tomorrow, yeah.
You say, so much of parenting is not about what is psychologically correct, but what is morally correct.
Question I now hear more than any other question, Doug. Is it normal rather than is it right? It's normal for a 3-year-old to melt down fit on you. It's not right. 14-year-olds can get disrespectful if you let them. It's not good. We're much more concerned about what is normal. You know, my kid's room is a total pit. It's absolutely below city health code. But every other parent says, oh, that's normal. That's the way they are at that age.
Right.
Just shut the door. Whatever happened to the parents saying, I don't want part of my room being below health code?
Right. Well, it's interesting, too, because those same people will tell you, I don't want to hear anything about normal. What's normal? Nobody's normal. What's normal?
Interesting.
Right?
Very interesting.
So why they talk about normal? You also say solid parenthood will always be grounded on the intangibles, love, good judgment, morals, and common sense. You also mentioned earlier about the idea of self-awareness being important.
As a parent, absolutely, because you have to realize, I don't see kids, Doug. I see their parents. And when they come in, I ask them, okay, describe for me what you do when he does this. What do you say when he does this? And they have to be attuned to how they're doing this so that we can work with it. I've got to know the approach you're taking, or you have to at least be aware of it enough to tell me. Well, I don't know. I guess I just kind of let it go. Well, how do you let it go?
Right.
What do you do?
You say a measure of fear and guilt, whether we like it or not, is inextricably tied to a healthy sense of right and wrong. Now, that you could project onto the church and society in general, right?
I was on a TV show once, not as good as yours. And a lady on there.
Was that your show you were on?
Well, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Lady on there said, she was a child development person, and she said, if you spank a child, he's going to fear you. He's going to absolutely fear you. And I said to her, I said, well, I think I want him to fear me in certain contexts. Oh, she was aghast at that one. And I said, I fear judges. Some of my friends are judges, but I fear being in their courtroom. I love police officers, but I fear being arrested by one in certain contexts.
Right, yeah.
I want my children to fear my reaction, not me. But we've become so delicate about this whole idea that if your children fear your reaction, somehow you're psychologically harsh.
Has there ever been a study on some of these people? Because I know in certain other situations, they studies on these people and find out they themselves had horrible relationships with their parents or in their own situation.
You mean the therapist types?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. It colors the way you look at how people should handle problems.
Right. You also mentioned the fact, tying into that, that talk is cheap. You say kids are much better at pulling us down to their level than we are at pulling them up to ours.
I've had parents say to me, do you know why I have so much trouble with him? Because we're too much alike. And I'll say, well, he's 9. What are you saying? You're acting like a 9-year-old?
Well, I would think somebody might see recognize that, but in recognize that, actually have an insight into how to deal with that
exactly.
person.
Yeah.
Because obviously your parents did.
He yells and screams, I'm yelling and screaming back. Wait a minute, who's the kid here?
Right. You also talk about changing our minds as a parent's prerogative. Because in a couple of places, it seems like that people are frozen with the idea, well, what if I make a mistake? How much damage I'm going to do to my child?
I tell parents, you want to calculate how many mistakes you're going to make? It's going to be many, many thousands. And they'll look at me as, what? 365 days a year, kids home 20 years. Okay, that's approximately 20, it's about 8,000. Well, if you make one mistake a day, and a mistake's easy to make, pick your code up. Well, I just asked them to pick my code up and I didn't do anything about it. And my tone was nasty. So if you want to call that a mistake, you could. Well, there's two right there. We do all kinds of things in being human that are mistakes. You know, God knew he was going to be raised. We were going to be raising kids, and we're human. We're so afraid of mistakes now. We future project.
One quick question, and we're just about out of time. Basic back talk comes in two types, grumble talk and nasty talk.
Grumble talk is the old behind the back, heading up the stairs, you know. Remember, what was that grumpy bear? That bear, you know.
A dog that did that to you, so it was always mumbling.
And nasty talk is much more serious.
Right.
Grumble talk, parents have a choice. They can ignore it if they wish, or they can figure, no, that's disrespect, because keep in mind, he's not grumbling toward himself. He's grumbling toward you.
Right.
So just because you can't hear it
doesn't
mean it's not nasty.
So you got another book in the works?
I do. A book on anxiety.
Okay. Will that be proudly published by EW10, hopefully?
Absolutely. You guys. How many of my books you have? 10, 12, 15?
Hey, listen, keep them coming. We have
I'm getting a little offended, offended. You used to do one show per book. Now you're dividing it up two books a show.
Right, because you have too many books. That's Dr. Ray Guarende, Being a Grandparent Just Like Being a Parent, Only Different, and also Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime, The Best Gift You Can Give Your Kids, a great gift to your family. Published by EW10, available through the EW10 Religious Catalog, EW10RC.com for all things Catholic. I'm Doug Keck. This has been Bookmark. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see you next time.